James, we haven't talked about the triangle in a while.
Nope.
So for those of you who might be just starting with this or a more recent recording of ours, we've talked quite a bit, at least at the beginning, about the three points of the brewing industry, of the growers, the brewers, and the consumers. And of course, at least for us in this part of the world, it's been heavy growing season. So we've really been leaning in that general direction, which has been good and important. But we're going to take a little bit of a slide more back toward the brewing industry today. But we still want to make sure that we cover the fact that this is extremely important as a grower, and certainly as a consumer, I think you'll find this interesting. You know, the beer industry is, it's so inextricably linked between those three groups, and especially as relatively young as the craft beer industry is from a consumer taste perspective, everything a consumer wants, the brewers are, or at least should be listening to, maybe over-listening to, and we'll definitely get into that. But as a grower, the movement of this industry and the types of beers that are being created and put out there, your variety selection matters, and the way you do business matters. It all links back together.
It sure does.
That pearl of wisdom brought to you by James.
Brought to you by James, yeah. I'm not on my game yet this morning.
We're still doing our coffee thing. We're going to need to dedicate an episode or two to just coffee, because we do so many of these recordings in the morning instead of in the evening.
It's all about coffee right now.
It is.
Yeah. But to your point, the fact is that growers cannot operate their business in a vacuum. They have to be keenly aware of market forces, and in most cases be ahead of them so that they can pivot, because it takes them a lot longer to make that turn than the rest of the industry does. So it's not enough as a small scale hop grower just to grow hops and hope to sell them. You have to be deeply engaged in the industry, and that takes a lot of effort, especially for people who may not be big beer fans. Hopefully these kind of topics and trends that Greg's going to talk about are going to, you know, be that a bit of a spark to get you interested, or certainly at least a way to stay very at a very high level engaged in what the industry's doing. So why don't we just jump in, and Greg, why don't you give us a roundup of what you've been finding?
Sure. So we're members of the Brewers Association, and you should be. If you're involved in the beer industry at all, you don't have to be a brewer. You could be what's called a supporter. And we've got their logo on our website. They are an organization that gathers together folks in the industry and talks about what's going on and looks for trends and tries to help everyone up their game. You know, the rising tide helps all ships and all that. So there's two different components that they look at around this time of year when they talk about prior year, because it's now the middle of 2019. So we've probably got our ducks in a row where we can really look at 2018 with any sort of fair perspective. And so there's the industry in general and how it's doing. And then there are tastes, consumer tastes. And we'll get into that in the second half. But if we talk about the business, the craft beer industry, so just some high-level numbers to start. There were 1,049 new breweries that opened in 2018.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that is a ridiculous number of breweries, especially when you think about the fact that 10 years ago in the U.S., there were only 1,200 breweries. So think about that. There were 1,200 breweries. Now there are about 7,500. There were 1,200 breweries 10 years ago. Last year, we opened over 1,000.
There's got to be breweries closing, too, right?
Yes, there are breweries closing. So last year, about 220-ish breweries shut their doors officially. You know, that's a pretty high percentage compared to the 1,000 that opened. Yeah. That's a pretty big number.
Yeah.
But when you think about that number that are just popping open, and the market, the overall beer market, down about 1%. So you've got all these additional venues to get beer and choices for beer. And the choice thing we'll get into later on when we get into consumer tastes. But I'll preview it by saying we are starting to hit maximum capacity for the number of different things a consumer can look at and not have their eyes melt out of their head.
Yeah, saturation. Total saturation.
Yeah.
I wonder, though, looking at those numbers, 20%, if you just look at the closed versus new, 20%. Mm-hmm. There's a 20% drop or closure rate.
Yep. And let's be clear, that 20% is not a part of the whole of the open. So we're not talking about 20% of new breweries fail.
No.
And it's interesting when you start reading into the detail, I don't think it's an overwhelming percentage, but a portion of those that closed have been around for a long, long time. And unfortunately, I'll say, for my tastes, in many cases, they are more of your classical breweries. They're not the hip and trendy ones, and that's why they're closing.
Yeah, that's so disgusting.
You get into this issue of marketing and, again, consumer tastes. We had on a few months back our friends at Kodo Design, who do a lot of branding work and rebranding work, and they spoke to us about a brewery they worked with, which works strictly with the German purity laws, and they had to do a significant rebranding because they were losing share to folks who said, oh, that's my dad's beer. That's not my beer. Mm-hmm. So that's a disconcerting thing that the not so much the German purity laws specifically, but in general that those classic styles, those old school breweries are losing out.
So the people who make beer that actually tastes like beer are losing.
Yes.
Super.
Now, when we talk about the industry, the serving and brewing of beer industry, you've got a couple different levels and you have to really split those apart, because I said the beer market's down about 1%, but it definitely chops up in ways. So brew pubs up 13% in terms of just barrels produced. But the vast majority of that growth is from these new ones that are opening. You don't open as a national brewery. You start small.
Okay, so that's the increase in production is due to the increase in scale of those brew pubs, not that there's 13% more brew pubs opening.
Correct. There's 13% more volume of beer showing up in the brew pub lane, we'll call it. And most of that increase, it's not what we would call organic growth. It's not brew pub. It's not Joe's Brew Pub selling 13% more. It's that there's more volume because Joe's has two competitors at either end of the block now.
Gotcha.
Then you've got micros, and they're up about 16%. And again, it's new openings. It's just increased volume due to increased doors. In the micro space, of that 1,049 new breweries we talked about last year, 720 of them came from that micro space.
Wow. So those are distributing smaller scale craft breweries.
Yep.
That's impressive.
It is. It seems to be where a lot of them are going.
And it blows my mind that they would chase the distribution market when the profit margin is so slim.
I know.
So now you've got to make it up in volume. And when you make it up in volume, most of the time, not all the time, you have to sacrifice quality. And then to your point earlier, if you're going to buy beer and you're just overwhelmed and your eyes melt out of your head because there's just too much, and what do? You end up defaulting and going back to the one thing that you know. So I don't get it.
See, and we're going to touch on the comment you just made is very interesting.
Okay.
And some people, yes, will default back to the one you know, but there was an interesting question in the consumer survey that was done about how often do you intentionally look for something new? You know, we've talked about going into a brewery and saying, what's new? A lot of people, and I'm one of them, go into a beer store and say, what haven't I tried? What am I willing to take a chance on?
I would if I was confident that I could find anything that was good.
Yeah, and I have poured beer down the drain. I've taken some chances and said, looks good. Now, what's interesting...
Snake eyes.
Yeah. I'm more likely to take a chance on something that is completely different than, if I know I'm walking in there looking for an IPA, there's a couple that I would tend to lean toward rather than try a different IPA, unless there's something particularly interesting about it. But... what did I bring home that I did not enjoy? Two Roads, which was by me here in Central Connecticut, and one of the larger growing regionals at this point, they put out a Vietnamese coffee stout, and it had sweet cream and a bunch of stuff in it that was just so out there. And I used to go to a Vietnamese restaurant in college that made the most amazing iced coffee. And I said, I have to try this. And man, it was not good.
Yeah, I don't know that I would have shot for that one.
Yeah, it was a risk. It was a risk, yeah. And it did not work out well. But we're detouring into some stuff I want to talk about later. But
all right,
we'll come back to that whole idea of what does a consumer look for when they're in the store, and where are those trends moving? Because as you said at the very beginning, as growers in this industry, you've got to be aware of where those consumer tastes are going, because it does affect what you do. It affects who you're selling your hops to and what varieties you're growing. So you need to see those winds of change.
I think that for the small scale hop grower, the sales potential is really at the brew pub and the micro level, as opposed to regional or large or import. You know, you're not going to really touch those, but it's good to hear that the brew pub is growing so much in terms of volume, because those are often, I mean, that's where the brewers are making their most profit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they can make 70 to 80% profit on a pint they pour in their tap room, they're more willing, usually I found more willing, to spend more on raw ingredients and take more chances, because they're likely going to be able to make up any sort of loss they're going to have in a bad experiment by just the sheer volume of beer they're selling. So 13% up for brew pubs, that's very good news for growers.
It is. Those are the ones that they're going to be talking to. I mean, you're not taking your garbage bag of hops to the back door of MillerCoors.
No.
No,
you're not.
I mean, yeah, I'd love for someone to selfie video that and show us how that works out for you. it just sounds like a neat trending YouTube. But that's not how it goes.
Odds are whoever opens the door at MillerCoors won't know what they're looking at anyway, because all they use is extract.
Okay, fair.
Hops come out of a can, not out of a bag. What are you talking about?
Goodness, mm-hmm. Goodness. That's a whole nother story. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned regionals, so let's briefly touch on that just to complete the circle here. Regionals do about 15,000 to 6 million barrels a year, and they're flat. They're down a fraction of a percent. And that boils down to about 231 companies. And we're talking about Dogfish Head and Stone. Boston Beer, you could classify as a regional or the next tier up, which are your large and your importers. It sort of depends how you're looking at them.
Yeah.
But they are flat to down. But note the range I gave there, 15,000 to 6 million barrels. That's a huge range.
Yeah, it is.
If you look at the bottom end of that, 15,000 to 60,000 barrels, the folks that are entering the regional space, they're growing at 9%. So you know that regional bucket needs to be chopped a little further into some more segments, because it's just too wide a berth. Now, granted, if you're doing 6 million barrels, it's tough to grow at 9%.
It is. I mean, take a percent and be happy with it.
Exactly. Exactly.
There's... I mean, you look at New Glarus here in southern Wisconsin, and, you know, well known across the country. The beer doesn't leave the state, and they're up to 400,000 barrels.
Well, I will never forget Lewis Black, the comedian. His comment on Wisconsin is that you are not alcoholics, you're professionals.
And, yes.
that has always been one of my absolute favorite lines, and it's just so true.
I'll take it.
Okay, good. Embrace it.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got your regionals, and then the large and the imports, the AmBev and MillerCoors, Diageo, who bring in Guinness and other brands like that. But they're down about 1%, but that's, I'm not going to say it's a commodity product, but it really is a different animal. Very different animal. Now, that said, when you look at the total marketplace between the imports and what we'll call non-craft beer, it's the vast majority of the volume. So it's not like the brew pubs and the micros are running the world. But for our worldview right now, that's what we are focused on, is that brew pub and micro.
If the regional's down, is the large importers up, or are they flat or down?
They're down about a percent.
So then my question is it because the brew pubs and the micros are taking share, or is it because people are drinking other stuff.
So people are definitely...
Or not drinking, you know.
I think there's a couple of things going on. So, and it's a little bit misleading, the fact that they're down. Because they're down when it comes to beer. But some of them, many of them, are introducing spiked seltzers and wine coolers, you know.
Hard root beer.
And those are not beer, as we discuss it in the numbers. But these larger companies, because they already have that expensive distribution channel that you brought up earlier, they're finding other ways to get product into people's hands. So they are down. They're down a bit, but yeah. If there's a little less beer in the market, but they're finding other tasty ways to get to people, that works for them.
Sure.
Of course, it requires no hops.
Right. It requires no hops. And, you know, as we saw, at least we're seeing here in Madison, another very prominent Reinheitsgebot brewer who absolutely, positively would never brew anything that, you know, wasn't just made of barley and yeast and hops and water. Just introduced a hard seltzer line. And I'm like, I don't disparage them from, you know, trying to tap into part of their market that, or potential market that's like, do you have any beer that doesn't taste like beer? Yeah, here's one called Not Beer. It's hard seltzer. And people are fine with that. And honestly, from my perspective, if that trend continues, all the better, because then those brewers hopefully will feel like they don't have to make frickin' milkshake IPAs all the time to appease those people. Here, drink something that's actually not beer, and let the beer drinkers rejoice.
Yeah, I agree with you. I have nothing bad to say about that. It's a business. It's a business. Right. They're a beverage-producing business. And again, the distribution piece, which is such a hard hurdle and an expensive hurdle to overcome, it's zero incremental cost for them there. They can leverage their existing distribution to the same locations. And maybe it will temper the silliness that I'll politely call it silliness. I know you've got better four-letter words for it that goes on right now.
Let's talk about, we'll get to that in a minute, because there's other forces at work there too, that when we talk about profitability in the brewing industry and whatnot. So I don't want to derail that that yet. So let's save that a little bit.
And one last thing, you know, as we transition over to consumer here from the large, the big picture of the industry is, and this got a lot of bad press maybe a year or two ago, the fact that the big guys were gobbling up the small guys. So when we look at some of these numbers, you need to keep in mind that some of your quote-unquote locals are owned by much larger companies. I mean, most everyone knows at this point, I think, that, you know, Blue Moon and Shock Top, I mean, those are owned by the big boys. But some of the ones that really play themselves off as little beers, and I don't know how many of them you and I both see in our parts of the country, but Goose Island, Elysian, I mean, they're owned by Anheuser-Busch. Ballast Point, which is, you know, out from California, is very big by me, but I mean, they're owned by Constellation. So
Lagunitas is owned by Heineken.
Yep. Leinenkugel's by you is actually a Miller Coors product. So, and some of those brands started on their own and were purchased. Others, Blue Moon was completely, you know, created by Miller Coors as a side brand to try and capture the craft beer market by looking different.
Right.
But they were able to go out there, boom, with distribution, with economies of scale, and capture that market. So it's interesting. There's an element to which these the regionals run into a little bit of trouble. And I believe it was the head guy at Dogfish Head who said this recently, talking about the fact that you run into this difficult problem when you're distributing significantly, in that someone walks into a beer store, they want to purchase something, and they say, you know what, I can get that 60-minute IPA anytime I want because it's distributed everywhere. So I'm not going to bother with that. I'm going to do something different because I can always fall back to that. It exists everywhere. So your distribution, even though, as you said before, you make it up in volume eventually, it can get in the way of the curious consumer.
That's an interesting concept.
Yeah. Marketplace, you know, things are going well at the lower end. They're a little bit stable at the high end, I'll say. You're not seeing things plummet. And for several years, things were skyrocketing. So will we see at some point a trip and a fall? I don't know. I mean, it looks like that kind of a curve where things go sky high for a few years and then they stabilize, and we may see some things start to trip.
I don't know that it'll be precipitous plummet, but I think that it's following the natural order of, you know, free market. And we are reaching saturation.
We are.
And the model will either evolve, or it will, if it doesn't, it will see a decline to the point where people will exit the space because there's just not enough capital flowing through their businesses. Mm-hmm. So that's the natural market forces. We hear people talk about let the free market, you know, determine what happens to the industry, as opposed to, you know, government getting in and subsidizing it and keeping it floating. People have been talking about the craft beer bubble, like it's going to burst, like, you know, the housing market. It's not going to happen like that. You know, the housing market bubble was created by some particularly heinous fuckery, most foul, in the banking industry, but we're not seeing that in the brewing industry. So it's, I think, more any self-correction that the industry is going to see is just going to be due to plain old market forces, I think.
Yep, I would absolutely tend to agree with that. And that all starts with consumers. We see how fickle the consumer base is and how willing the brewers are to bend and twist to their strange, lactose-infused, weird, hazy IPA stuff. Mm-hmm. So
per our earlier podcast, mm-hmm. the Be True to Your Brew podcast, it's about perception and, you know, how are you managing it? So we'll see what happens there. Anyway, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah. Again. We've been there. Yeah. So let's shift over to consumer behavior, because that's something else that the Brewers Association has done. They've kind of gone through and done some surveys on how consumers act. Now, these consumers, James, are our friends, so let's be nice.
Or is it just, did they just have a big question mark and then said that was the end of their report?
Yeah, it basically was an emoji with tears, and underneath it said, "What the fuck are you doing?"
R.I.P. beer.
So the Brewers Association surveyed 1,100 craft beer drinkers, and this was so interesting to me. They allowed that phrase craft beer drinker to be defined by the participant. You know, do you think you're a craft beer drinker? Well, what does that mean? What do you think that means? So, you know,
according to the story that just launched from the Boston Globe this morning, if it was someone self-identified as a craft beer drinker, I can tell you that they were more than likely overwhelmingly white male between the ages of, you know, 25 and 40 and have a beard.
Have a beard. The beard. Right. I love the beard thing. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
That's great. So what do the consumer, they did this only a couple of months ago, back in May, and wanted to get some information on what people thought about the industry in general. They say that they balanced it between age and gender and income and marital status and ethnicity and region and all that. So we're gonna believe them that our sample here is balanced. What they're finding is more of the adult population is actually drinking craft beer. But it does seem that when they're drinking less, they're moving over to hard stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think you are seeing a marketing trend in that direction, where we're marketing more of the hard liquors and trying to make those a bit more trendy. And that is taking a bit of share away from beer.
Yep. Those are the hard seltzers and stuff you're talking about. And mm-hmm. some ciders and whatnot. But
yeah, it definitely trends toward men. Trends toward younger. These are things that we are not surprised to hear at all. When they ask a beer drinker, you know, what percent of the beer do you drink is craft beer? Because look, I will, I'll pop a Michelob Ultra now and then. I have no reason to deny that, except that you'll make fun of me later.
Oh no! I have been known to imbibe my high life from now and again, every now and again. So, mm-hmm. not a problem.
As an interesting aside, and we'll get to this, I don't know if the 80s healthy kick is coming back in full force, but we've talked about it before. Maybe not what they traditionally called light beers, but low carb and low alcohol beers are starting to make a comeback. And Michelob Ultra has been a shining star for the higher tier of beer in the last year or so. They cannot, I think it grew 9% last year, which is tremendous when you think about the rest of that level of the industry remaining flat.
Well, it's let's talk about light beer, because I just saw this morning on Potosi's Brewing Company's Facebook page that they're launching a new light beer called Lux, L-U-X. And it's 3.9. It's got like some stupid low level of carbs, and it tastes fantastic. So I'm hoping that we are steering away from these ABV bombs that, you know, if it's not 8.5%, you're not a man if you don't drink it. That's bullshit that has to stop.
21% of craft beer dollars in 2018 were spent between 7% and 7.5% ABV.
God.
Which to me, and now maybe I'm just an old man, I one of those, and usually that's in a 16-ounce can, and I'm in bed. I'm done.
Yeah, yeah. I don't get it. I think it's, you know, another one of those, I don't know if it's a machismo thing, like, hey, I love Carolina Reaper and Ghost Peppers, kind of hot, spicy stuff. And it's, oh, I only drink beer that's 8% or above, or I only drink the beer so hoppy you go blind. I don't get it. And because most of those beers are, again, not balanced, but there's a market for it. And I don't understand what it is.
I don't get it either. And I, you know, is it the whole, I only have to drink one or two of them instead of where I would have had four? Are you letting the alcohol be your capacity measure as opposed to just being full?
Why? Yeah. Well, there's that. But at that point, why don't you just have a Jack and Coke and shut up?
Yeah, there
I
is
mean,
that.
Why have a double bourbon barrel imperial stout to get hammered when it is thick as cough syrup, and you could have had, you know, something else? And maybe that's where the market's going with these other drink types. I don't know.
Yeah, there. It's tough. It's tough. I don't know the answer to that one. But. Hopefully that trend toward lower alcohol will, at least for my personal taste and yours, will continue.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. So the next couple things that the Brewers Association looked at, and I think these have some interesting statements about the consumer, are if you're drinking more beer than you were a year ago, why? And then we'll go into if you're drinking less, why. So if you're drinking more, why? The main reason is they're drinking less other alcoholic beverages, which is interesting that they're making the move over to craft beer. But some of the other very highly rated options there were looking for more variety, looking for better quality, visiting more brew pubs. There are 1,000 more available right now. As you well know, my own personal problem is one opened up 5 minutes from my house this past year. I am absolutely drinking more than I was a year ago because
you are.
They're there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they're your only friends now.
They are so. My only friends. And yeah. And I've made it clear whenever I go in there what a horrible influence they are. But I was there yesterday.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, more available on premise. So what is the most interesting to me about that, those that said they're drinking more because they're visiting more brew pubs, that skews just slightly, but it skews older. It's not young adults, it's not your 20 and 30 somethings who are going out to are saying, oh, I have a brew pub, now I'm going to drink more. It's your mid 40s to upper 60s segment that are going out and saying, ooh, I've got a place to hang out.
I think you're personally responsible for about 1.4% of
it. It's totally me. It's absolutely me. I drag the few friends I have outside of the brewery, I drag them to the brewery. It's I'm in a bad place right now. I am.
Yeah. it's a little dark for you, right? I don't need to go there. But I would say, just from, you know, being in a very craft beer centric community, that I would agree with those demographics. That's what I'm seeing as well. I mean, yeah, there's, you know, it's not like we're all old grumpy people in there. Not yet. That's my dream, though. But the trend is certainly, here in Madison, we, like in downtown Madison, I would say it's 50-50 men, women, in the brew pub tap rooms, and then probably in that, I'd say, mid to upper 30s at the very youngest on average. And a lot of gray hairs in there. And I'm rapidly approaching that segment. Mm-hmm. But certainly, and I would put them in retiree category. We see a lot of that. Of course, Madison has a quite vibrant retirement population here and fairly affluent retired population. So it doesn't surprise me.
I love how you use the word vibrant, and we also have a fair amount of retirees, and I just would have said we got a lot of old people here.
And by vibrant, I mean these are Madison, for those of you who don't know, Madison, Wisconsin is a very active lifestyle community. So it's just people out biking and running and hiking and camping. It's just a huge part of the culture here. So even folks who are in their retirement phase are still vibrant. They're healthy. They're active, and they are enjoying their beer.
Yep, and they, similar to the environment I have here with the retirees, they are retirees with disposable income.
Mm-hmm. So more on the affluent side, yes, I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. So for the people who are drinking less than a year ago, by far the highest reason they gave, over half of them said it's because they're drinking other stuff. And that other stuff, most of that was other beer, just not craft beer.
Hmm.
You know, going back to the larger companies, the, you know, the your Buds and your Millers, but then a fair amount of wine and spirits. 10% of those people said hard seltzers. That is definitely a thing.
Yep. Oh, I know. Well, it's a mixed drink. It's just in a can. That's really what it comes down to.
Sure. 40% of folks who said they're drinking less said they're opting for a healthier lifestyle. And honestly, most of those people, I think their spouse was watching them answer the questions, and that's why they said that.
And they're probably dead now.
They might be. They might be. So I don't believe that as an answer.
No, not at all.
The fact that 10% of them said they're drinking less because they're consuming more marijuana, I thought was great.
The recent issue of New Brewer talks specifically about Deschutes. I think it's Deschutes.
Yes.
Marketing to cannabis users.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think they see this coming, as well as the fact that the FDA now has ruled that CBD cannot be added to beer because it isn't a food product. So there's a bunch of CBD-infused beers on the market now that will no longer be able to be used.
But they can do made. But they can do CBD, correct me if I'm wrong, but other drinks, just not beer necessarily.
That's correct.
Yep.
So at least depending on how it's ruled. So the fact that CBD is not a food product by the FDA, it means that the TTB will deny label approval for any beers that have hemp extract or anything like that as an ingredient. So we'll see what that does to their whole marketing path.
But yeah, that is interesting. It and as that pops in certain areas of the country, the whole legalization issue, it's going to give folks something else to do recreationally.
Yep.
I think your hardcore people who are already smoking, it's not going to affect a thing.
Not so much, no.
But your casual folks are going to go down that path to some degree. So and less calories, but more munchies. So I'm not sure the net works out there.
Yeah, not so much. And there'll probably be a spike in PBR sales.
Yeah, that is true. So maybe what you need is to sell bags of pretzels and chips by the cooler. And
ooh, there you go. Yep.
That will always help.
Yep. Doritos. Ah. And pork rinds.
Okay, so then we get a little more into the mind of the consumer. What's important when choosing a beer to purchase? And these, I don't know if they gave them answers to choose from or if they were soliciting open feedback, but flavor, freshness, aroma, ingredients, these were the things that popped to the top of the list. A fair amount of people said bitterness, which isn't a word I would think would come up unless they were handed a list of words and said, pick the few. That's not a word that rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, exactly. It's probably some sort of a survey with various.
Yeah, pick five or whatever.
Pick five, yeah. Rank these from 1 to 6.
But you did have locally made on there, although low on the list, quite honestly. The lowest two on the list were high alcohol content and then low alcohol content. So they were
people
not
want something in the 5% range.
That's exactly. They all want to be mid-range. At the very least, it tells me that there is some percentage that pay attention to it significantly to our
well, that gives me hope.
Point before. It does give me hope as well.
And if you're looking for something mid-range, that usually means it's also going to, if you are in that 5%, you're not going to get a lactose IPA in that sector. So that's good news. Good news.
Hopefully get us back to some sense of normalcy.
Yeah.
So here's something that I found very interesting from a shopping perspective. 53% of drinkers said that...
Is this beer drinkers or just drinkers in general?
Beer drinkers. Craft beer drinkers.
All right. 53% of craft beer drinkers.
53% said that they are the primary consumer of the beer they're buying. Now, think about that. That means 47% of them said, nope, I'm buying it for other people. I am buying it for sharing. I'm buying it to bring to a party. So you're buying with the intent of knowing your audience, which is not just you.
But do they really know their audience, or are they just picking up something?
You know, I was on a road trip for the last couple of days. If you're watching our Instagram, we're recording this right after I came back from the World Scout Jamboree in West Virginia. I heard Country Roads. I heard that song at least 87 times in a 3-day period.
Mm.
Before we went on the trip, you know, I was going with a buddy. It was not a officially scouting event, so we brought a little beer to drink when we were at our campground. And he said, bring some stuff. I like lots of things. I just don't like IPAs. I had the hardest time shopping for I don't like IPAs.
Mm-hmm.
That is a tough thing to find. I found some good stuff, but I was in that store. I had just read this survey when I went out and did that shopping, and it was so top of mind to me that I was very conscious of how I was shopping a little differently. Very interesting as well, 65% of women said that they're shopping for other people.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me either.
Nope, me neither. They're buying for a party or a barbecue or something and trying to figure out what is, you know, used or balanced all the time. Trying to find a balance of the right beers that people will enjoy. And from a brewing perspective, I love when I can pick up a variety pack of something and I can try things. Sometimes it works well, sometimes it doesn't, but too often you're trapped into a 4 or 6 pack of one beer, and if it's, you know, Vietnamese coffee stout, you may not be happy with how that ends up.
Yeah, that was back in the day. Sam Adams used to make a case, or 12, no, it was a 12-pack of bottles, three bottles of 4 different types of beer in it, and that was the only place that you could get their distributed Scotch ale that they made.
That was Sam Adams. They did the same thing with their cherry wheat during the winter. They only put it in their multi-pack. I remember waiting for that winter one because I loved their cherry wheat beer.
I loved that Scotch ale, but you could not get it outside of their variety pack anywhere.
Yep. Who was it? Saranac at FX Matt. They used to do the same thing with a beer, their Black Forest, which I loved.
Oh, I remember that.
Loved.
Yep.
And you could only get it in that variety pack.
I wonder what the marketing decision is around that. It's not maybe a big enough distribution market for that specific beer, or was it, did they purposely know it had a big draw, so let's throw some of our other stuff in the variety pack so we can move it? I would think that's a bad idea, but maybe that's what, I don't know.
I guess it depends. I love that variety pack concept, and you don't see it as often. I know, who is it? Two Roads By Me does their bus of beers. It's a it's a cardboard box with 8 cans, you know, 4 different beers, 2 of each, and
they all taste like cardboard.
Well, yeah, there's that. But you know, you're going on a camp out, you throw that in the cooler. Boom, you got a little something for everyone. So I guess when I'm purchasing for myself, I will buy what I want and have multiple of the what I want. If I'm buying for others, if I were to have a barbecue here tomorrow, I would probably end up with a couple of those types of variety packs, just so there are choices.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there are so many people I know who just kind of look in there and go, oh, is that Sam Adams? I like Sam Adams. Well, Sam Adams makes a dozen different varieties. Do you know what kind you're picking up? It's Sam Adams.
Right.
We spoke a little bit at the very beginning here about, do you buy the old, the thing you know versus the thing you don't know? So they've been asking the question the last couple of years, how often, if at all, do you purchase a craft beer brand that you've never seen advertising for or heard of? Something just brand new to you. And in 2019, in the survey they just did, 21% of people said, yeah, I will do that to a large degree. I'll just buy something that looks interesting.
So that's your segment, yeah?
That's me. That's me. Mm-hmm. I will, and I happen to love the beer store model of make your own six pack, because mm-hmm. I make my own sampler. I try a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is that 21% has been declining year after year after year. It was 26% last year. It was 29% the year before that. It was 35% the year before that. Now, that may be because there were less choices out there. There were, you know, the new entries into the market were more exciting than, and ooh, something new. Whereas now, there's so much something new, it's a little less of a thing.
What do you think I'm going to say? Well, let's think about it. So if you had more, if there's more and more and more out there, you have such a wide variety to choose from. I would expect that number to stay stable or go up a little bit because there's so much to try.
Mm-hmm.
But it's dropping. And what that tells me, at least the reason why I don't do that, is because when you look at the odds, I'm more likely than not to get stung.
Yeah.
Because there are so many new brewers that really should not be brewing anything. And the beer is bad. It's just bad beer. And I know in the Wisconsin Brewers Guild about 3 or 4 years ago, we had a big summit talking about this very fact that, you know, as members of the guild, we got to police each other because you can't be putting out bad beer just because you've got to make beer. And it's an issue. I would think that at least a portion of the decline of people just going out and trying random new things is the fact that roulette wheel is not in your favor. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe, I agree.
It's just curmudgeon-y James, but
I do,
that's
got to
be a part of it.
And it's interesting because, you know, we talk about IPAs. I like an IPA if it's a good IPA. And the chance of me stumbling onto a bad one, an unbalanced one, is much higher than stumbling onto a good one.
I would, for IPAs, if this trend of putting the hop variety on the six-pack or whatever on the outside of it is a blessing for me, because if it says Mosaic or Simcoe or any of these other trendy hops, I just avoid it because those are gross,
mm-hmm.
right? And I'll look for something that says traditional, right? Made with, you know, whatever. And I'll be like, okay, I'll give that a shot.
So in terms of that purchase decision of a new variety, I found that quote I was looking for earlier, and it was actually by the CEO of Stone Brewing, which is out in California, and they're a large regional player. And
San Diego.
Yep. And they actually grew 2% last year, which is a tremendous victory considering that segment of the market and how they've done. So here's what their CEO said. I'm just going to read this flat out because I think it's interesting. Craft beer fans are having the time of their lives with so many beers to choose from. They've become what we refer to as promiscuous in their beer choices. So larger brands like Stone, which have achieved an incredible feat of distribution, are less urgent of a purchase when there's such a high volume of options around every corner. The solution? We double down on good beer.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. So it's the point I was making before. I think I was using Dogfish Head as the example, where I can find that anywhere. It's a good fallback, but first I'm going to look for something new. And that does not help these regional guys at all.
No. But I'm the other way. If I'm going to a party and I don't want to have to gamble, I want to have a sure thing in my beer because, well, I am like the last guy you want to bring beer to a party. But it'd be like me and the two old guys drinking it. You know, it's like I'll snag New Glarus because everybody in the state knows who they are, and they make damn good, solid beer. As opposed to somebody like Carbon 4 Brewing here in Madison that makes something called Fantasy Factory, which is a hot mess of a nasty-ass West Coast IPA. And there's so much of it sitting on the shelves that it's aging, and IPAs do not age well, and they age very quickly. So with as much as there is on the shelf to choose from, those SKUs aren't moving and turning over as fast as they used to. And so the odds are I'm going to get one that is stale or on its way out. So why would I do that?
Yep. And that's a really good distinction. What you're saying there is that if you're going to a party and you're bringing something, you go with what's safe.
And that's, you know, if I want to get something for me, I'm going to get, you know, here at home, I'm going to get something that I enjoy. And there's just, I have too much other excitement in my life than to, you know, gamble on my beer at this point.
And I mean, we could spend a whole episode talking about flights and the mindset around, you know, taproom time, but that's where the experimentation comes in.
Yep. I'll do that.
Yeah. I mean, you talk to any brewer and they'll tell you the difference between their pint beers and their flight beers. Mm-hmm. We've talked before a bit about the saturation point of these varieties of, you know, at what point does your brain just melt trying to figure out what you're looking at on the shelf? And it's interesting because the Brewers Association, they titled this section, "The Mix is Just About Right." And I'm going to respectfully disagree with them, because when 35% of the people you survey say there are too many choices, that mix is not about right.
No, not at all.
So 35% said there are too many choices, 52% it's just right, and 13% said not enough.
Yeah, well, those people are never going to be happy. Much like me, but on the other side of the spectrum.
So, I mean, that perspective, and we've talked before about packaging and looking down the aisle, it can be fatiguing. Especially if you are looking for something new and different, just figuring out what it is you're looking for.
And I would say, I think we're spoiled, though, here, certainly in the States with the variety that we have. But our friends that are listening in other countries, you know, their markets may just be expanding right now. And so for them, it's an exciting time. But for us, it's a, you know, we're fatigued over here.
We are. We absolutely are. It's a wonderful time to be a beer drinker. And I think back 10, 15 years ago when we were saying the same things about coffee, when all of a sudden we had coffee choices. It wasn't just Maxwell House in the can and Folgers. And now, you know, you have so many different choices. With beer, it's a great time to be alive. It's a great time to try things. But I almost feel stressed that I can't try it all. All right. So there's some stuff they go into in here about packaging and about, you know, cans are making a huge comeback, which, of course, we know. It's interesting that people still don't believe that cans taste as good or that they're as fresh as bottles. And yet, what changes have been made over the years in terms of the quality of what you're putting in a can?
Yeah. If you just even just look at the potential for dissolved oxygen infiltration in the packaging between bottles and cans. If you look at the science, why are people still using bottles? I don't get it. Cans are so much more of a safer bet from a spoilage and shelf stability standpoint. That just blows my mind.
And if you look at the consumer perception, it's exactly the opposite. Mm-hmm. You know, what are the primary reasons you'd buy in each of these types of packaging? For cans, it's convenience, ease of transport. Taste and freshness are low, and I would not purchase that way. 14% of people said they won't buy cans, which they're missing out on a ton of beers that only can at this point. So that's a surprisingly high number to me.
And in Wisconsin, with our outdoor lifestyle, you can't take bottles into state parks. Mm-hmm. You can't take bottles in your canoe or your kayak as you're floating down the river. It's got to be cans, or when you're fishing. So it was a huge deal when New Glarus started producing, you know, Spotted Cow and Moon Man in cans. And then you just saw it skyrocket. And you're like, ooh, we're onto something here.
Yeah. Only 1% of people said they wouldn't buy in a bottle. And they far and away say taste, quality, freshness are light years ahead in a bottle than a can. But that is in their heads.
It's totally in their heads.
And it was that way at one point, not that long ago, but it's just not anymore. It's not reality.
No.
You know, the last thing I think I do want us to hit here is the beer styles, because I want you to get a chance to complain. Oh, here's their slide where they define crisp, juicy, malty, spicy. I'm just going to let you stew on that for a little bit. But interest in craft beer by profile. The word crisp is making a comeback.
Good.
Which is good. So you're going to be very surprised by these numbers. I know I was. What's winning for male craft drinkers? Dark and malty are the words that they were leaning toward. And the words they were leaning away from versus a year ago are juicy, hazy, and fruity.
Good.
So, hallelujah. Those are exactly flip-flopped for women.
That doesn't surprise
me. Makes all the sense in the world. When you look at ages as well, the mid-30s and under, they want malty, they want hoppy, not surprising, and they want tart. And you're getting into all the sours and the trending there. And the older folks, the mid-30s and higher, they're looking for dark. They're still looking for juicy and hazy. You've got the dark making a comeback. You've got the crisp making a comeback. I think that's a good, good thing. As far as beer styles that are growing, IPA, not surprising. Imperial IPA, not surprising. But lagers are up 50% versus a year ago.
Yes.
Blondes are up 7.5%. And then American lagers are up, I'm sorry. And then pale lagers are up as well. So,
excellent.
Now, when you look at a percent of craft dollars spent on them, if you combine IPAs and Imperial IPAs, it's 34%. A third of craft beer dollars are spent on those. You've got just under 1% being spent on American lagers.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I'm not surprised either. But there's hope. There's hope. 3.5% spent on blondes. There is hope, and there's movement back towards some of those more traditional styles. All we can do is drink them and talk about them and share them with our friends. Beer is for sharing. We've talked about this for a long time. There are a lot of things that we've hit on here in bits and pieces, but let's circle it back to what we were saying at the beginning, which is how important this is as a grower. Hopefully as a grower, you're still listening because you like beer and you find the marketplace interesting. You need to understand where consumer tastes have been and where they're heading and where the industry is going.
See, we have to, you know, the trends that you talked about, the beer styles, the trends back towards crisp and dark and whatnot, those beer styles are not well suited for using these hop bomb varieties like Mosaic and Citra and things. And that's just, they're not there. So perhaps there's an opportunity here to bring up these numbers, hop growers, when you're talking to your brewers and say, well, look, this is what the trend says, and these are the hops that I grow. You know, I take this as good news. Yeah, there's still those misguided people that want their juicies, but the trend is looking good.
Did you really say there are misguided people that want their juicies?
I did say that, yes.
I cannot think of a better way to fade out on this than misguided people that want their juices. You know, at what point does your brain just melt?